Hi everyone, my name is Armand Yıldız. I have the great pleasure of having Damani Partridge as my guest today, and we'll talk about his recent book, Blackness as a Universal Claim, Holocaust Heritage, Non-Citizen Futures, and Black Power in Berlin Today, which came out of University of California Press in 2022. Welcome, Damani.
Thank you.
I mean, it's such a pleasure to... I mean, this is the first time I'm talking to an author face-to-face on New Books Network, and what better place to talk about this book in the middle of Kreuzberg?
Yeah.
And before we start with the book, can you tell us a bit about yourself?
I'm an anthropologist teaching at University of Michigan. I've been there for a while, and I've been in Berlin since in Germany since 1989 when I was an exchange student in Niedersachsen. A lot of people say, a lot of my Berlin friends say that I'm like half Berliner. So, this project was inspired by the what I saw in my first book as the problematics of what happened after the fall of the wall, where even though everyone was supposed to be free, particularly people of color were experiencing it as a moment of extreme repression. The first book was focused on sort of the thinking about the analytics of how one was excluded, simultaneously included but excluded from possibility. And this book is really thinking about how to organize given that consequence or that reality.
Mm-hmm. And how, can you tell us a bit more about the story behind the book? Like, how did you start working on this, especially after your last book? How was the shift from...
I don't remember exactly. I mean, I was here in Berlin and I went to a play. And I was really struck by the power of the theater, the youth. It was a youth theater, by their kind of the claims about what they were experiencing, and then the youth their response back, you know, to what they should be experiencing. It took me 6 months to get in contact with the people for the theater. Like, I went to one meeting that didn't happen, and then, but eventually I was able to meet the director, and then they started doing a play on Black Power. And then someone said, a young person from the theater said, "We're doing this play on Black Power, can you help us?" And I was like, "Well, you know, it's not my special, but yes, you know, I will join." And so I started joining this play on, they call it Black Hair Germany. And that's how I got engaged with the theater and with this thinking about blackness in Germany and beyond.
I mean, and this brings me to the title of the book, Blackness as a Universal Claim. Yeah. Can you elaborate on that?
I think it's important that I'm not necessarily saying that blackness is universal, but I'm saying that lots of people are claiming it, or seem to be claiming it globally, and why and how, what does this mean for a kind of political possibility? What does it mean to think from the position of blackness when you're thinking about liberation, you know, for example? And I really discovered that in the theater when they were studying Black Power in the US in this case, and thinking about how those possibilities, how that kind of politics might be relevant to their possibilities here in Germany. I mean, most of the people, when you see them in the street, you might not see them as black. You know, a lot of them were Turkish, German, Arab, German, Palestinian. Some also from West Africa, one person in particular from West Africa, and also Afro-German. So I was struck by these claims to blackness, the thinking about blackness as a possibility, and then how one can organize, you know, and the efficacy of that kind of organization around blackness beyond a context in which people will be seen as black.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it struck me when I was reading also that, I mean, do you see it could be also problematic that non-black people claiming blackness?
Yeah, because anti-blackness is still present, you know, in many of those cases. Yeah. So then, I mean, I really think about this problem of appropriation, you know, whether or not, what constitutes appropriation, and also the responsibility, accountability to people who are black, even while claiming black. So I think that it creates a kind of, it in a way centers blackness if it's done or centers the politics, the necessity to counter anti-blackness. I mean, I think if it doesn't do that, then it is extremely problematic. And I think it has to be accountable to people who are perceived as Black and the context in which the claims are being made. But I think we also have to think, we have to recognize that Blackness is not itself not a stable category. So in Europe, I mean, lots of people have been positioned as Black, whether or not they wanted that or not, right? So I think we need to be thinking about all those things at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, also, can you maybe give us a couple of examples in, like, how some of the Turkish Germans or Arab Germans, or they were claiming, what does it mean to claim Blackness?
Yeah, I mean, so in this case, in the theater, there was this Malcolm X sign. It looked like a picket poster, and it was always sitting there when they were doing rehearsals, and just all the time, actually. I mean, like, people are also, like, wearing, in Berlin, I think, and other places, very popular, wear, like, Muhammad Ali t-shirts, or have Muhammad Ali in your house, like, a picture. So I think that they're, whether it's conscious or not, people are identifying with the politics in which they have to, even though the mainstream would want to ignore their existence, that Blackness becomes a vehicle to make their, not only their presence known, but the necessity for a different kind of configuration of possibility. I don't know if that answers you. I mean, in this case, I mean, in the theater, you could see the claims being made. Like, for example, like, there's that famous 1968 image of people, of the two track athletes at the holding their fists up, and they reconstructed that scene in the theater, and they sort of adapted it to their everyday circumstance now. So I see that as another way in which they were claiming Blackness. I mean, it was also very persuasive. They were acting, right? So they were acting in their roles. They learned about the 1968 Olympics and the raise and clinch fists. And then they were thinking about what that would mean for them now. So I think that's a way in which, I mean, that's one example in which Blackness is being claimed. Yeah. They also learned about lynching, you know, in the play. That even though I don't think they're trying to draw one-to-one equivalence, but they're thinking through how people became Black, like through slavery, through lynching, and then thinking through, if you begin with that as a position from which one has to imagine freedom, again, referring like to 89 as a moment of freedom, but even like in the US context, you know, there are other moments in which people are claiming freedom, and then, you know, in the Arab and Turkish context, or other, so if you're thinking about possibility, I think part of the problem also is that when Turkish German or Palestinian or Arab people in the German context claim racism, they're immediately denied that possibility because racism belongs in the past to some extent. Like, people think of it as belonging to the moment of German perpetration and the Holocaust. Many people, I mean, I think it is changing now, but people get accused of Holocaust denial if they claim racism just based on their own experience as Turkish German or Arab German. But then Blackness is something that people also recognize in Germany and other contexts. And so that becomes a vehicle then to think about, to make those experiences valid, you know, and then to think beyond them.
And I mean, like, this also brings me to the question of the US. I mean, in a way, I think Germany has a very specific and interesting, to say the least, relationship to the US. And also US figures so central in a way in your book as well. Like, can you tell us a bit about, like, this kind of dyadic relationship between the US and Germany, and how US figures in Germany and in your book?
Yeah. So I mean, it's tricky because I don't want to say that. I mean, I think if you try to say, well, this is the, you know, like, if you try to bring American examples into Germany without refining them, then people would say, well, that's not us, that's the US. You know, like, racism is taking place in the US, not here. So I mean, there's a tricky balance needed, you know, there. But I mean, I think that, and I think blackness can be claimed in other contexts in which the U.S. is not as present as well. And I don't think it's only because of U.S. Imperialism or the way in which U.S. media circulates that people are claiming blackness. I mean, it is a possibility that people are taking it up here, which has to do with both the power of these images, like the one I talked about before, of the Black Power 1968 Olympics, but also the presence of the, you know, like Martin Luther King was in Kreuzberg, for example, you know, the presence and Angela Davis, Audre Lorde, they're like, there's a long history of people coming and working with people in Germany to think about them, and also in the Vietnam War too as well, you know, like black soldiers leaving the army to protest the war, and then German activists helping them to do that. And then there's the Second World War and the fact that there was an African-American occupation, right? It wasn't only American occupation, but there are African-American occupiers. And what does it mean for African-Americans to occupy and Germany after the Second World War when they themselves were not free in the U.S., right? So that opens up, it becomes like also a critique of the U.S. politics, but also possibly for coalition around blackness in the way that gets transformed or molded into the German context.
And I mean, you do talk about blackness as occupying. Can you tell a bit about that as well? I mean, besides the actual occupation, what does it mean that blackness is occupying?
Yeah, I mean, if you take the moment, I think if you begin with the First World War, like the French sent black troops to the Rhineland in Germany. And that was seen as a horror, right? And those black troops were mostly, you know, West African in origin, were seen as, you know, like rapists, and somehow it was an unjust kind of occupation. But with the Second World War, with the occupation by black American troops, there was a kind of shift in how blackness was being understood. And I think that that shift is important to think about this possibility of occupation, which is not just, to me, it's not just military occupation, it's an occupation where people's minds and theories about possibility get also occupied, right? So it's both a physical but also a psychological kind of occupation that then allows for a transformation that not only people of color recognize, but even white Germans, you know, saw as a different kind of possibility. I think also because they saw white American occupiers as contradictory, you know, and with the black occupation was one that they could more easily identify with, because they also, the black troops were also being oppressed to some extent by the white American occupiers who were also in Germany.
And I mean, on top of these historical layers, you also bring Holocaust memory into this. How does Holocaust memory play out in this story?
Yeah, I started talking about it a little bit before, but Holocaust memory is a necessity as a the memory of the Holocaust is important, because without that, there is no. The accountability to that memory is critical to understanding what freedom might mean and for whom it might be relevant in the German context, in the European context, and beyond. For Turkish and Arab immigrants in particular, they're seen as people who need to be brought into that memory. But it's also assumed that they're anti-Semitic from the beginning, without like thinking that they can articulate their own positions, right? So they're brought in to the memory as perpetrators. I mean, other people have written about this, Ezra Ozarek, Michael Rothberg, for example. But again, so I think that discussion is important. I think it has to be reformulated so that people can also express their relationship to the memory, you know, without being told that they have to be positioned in a certain way or that they're automatically on the wrong side of things. So I think But blackness in Germany has to be thought in relationship to the memory. But it's but it also is not the same, right? So it creates a different kind of way of being without necessarily being accused of denying the Holocaust. Which is not to say that, you know, and black people are also, you know, I think it's also important to recognize that black people are also affected by the Holocaust as well, you know, historically and now. But still, it doesn't carry, it allows people to open up their, the contemporary relationship between how they can be in Germany now, right? So, I mean, a lot of my research in the first book and this one is also focused not only on blacks, but also on non-citizens.
Hmm.
Because this claim about citizenship as universal is constantly being denied. And I think we need to think from the place of denial as opposed to the assumption that it's already, that these rights are always existing and available to everyone. And so that, I think blackness holds not only non-black people who are claiming blacks accountable to blackness, but also holds the society at large accountable to think from positions of it, that are always already outside of this universal claim.
Yeah, I mean, also from the German context, we know very well that having German citizenship doesn't make you automatically belong to the German society.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even if you have formal citizenship, you're not necessarily doesn't mean that you have all the rights that you read about in the Constitution.
Yeah. And I mean, going to another direction. I mean, we were talking about this before. Theater has become such a central theme, if not ethnographic site, in recent ethnographies of Germany. Why do you think that is? Or I mean, you also talk about theater as an art form in itself. So, like, where does theater fall in your ethnographic research?
I mean, it turned out to be central in this book because, I mean, that's what drew me. I mean, I was drawn in by the theater in order to go to this particular theater, Theater X. But also because I found out, you know, through being in the theater, that it also was a place to rehearse possibility and to think. It's like a space to experiment with who one might be and how one might be in the world, and then to bring that, to move that experiment from the theater to everyday life, right? Or that everyday life becomes part of the theater, theater becomes part of everyday life. I think in Germany, theater has a special place also because it is already valued by the society at large and it gets lots of funding, right? So, I mean, you can check this, but I think like the art budget for Berlin, for example, is bigger than the National Endowment for the Arts in the U.S.
Wow.
So there's a place for theater as part of a kind of public education as well. And so I think that is really valuable. And I think that that's why theater emerges in the way it does. Like there's both space and time and lots of resources devoted to the arts and more broadly, but then theater in particular. And that becomes a really important space to reshape one's thinking and to reshape one's politics and possibility.
And how do you see this public education speaking to your idea of theater of democratization?
I'm not sure, like, I don't know, theater of democracy. I mean, I think that they use that term, like, in Theater X, like real democracy, as a way of thinking about theater. I mean, I worry sometimes that like the claims of democracy are not that they cover over the impossibilities of at least as it's been articulated, like, you know, like you can see some impossibility in the Second World War over the Holocaust, but you see it also after the fall of the wall with the violence against people who are perceived as foreign. In the U.S. context, you see it with the claims about freedom, right, when they were occupying Germany, but the fact that there was Jim Crow laws in the South that were excluding, you know, people systematically. So I think we need to come up with a different kind of I think the focus on blackness helps us to think about the necessity of coming up with a different kind of logic for thinking about politics and political possibility beyond the claims about democracy now, you know. So I think beginning with blackness and thinking about the extent to which blackness is a kind of universal claim suggests that a different kind of politics must emerge, you know. So, and it would probably be on different terms than the ones that we're using now as well, you know. So, yeah. Particularly, I mean, if slavery, not in Europe, in the U.S., and in other places, can happen at the same time that one is claiming freedom, you know, like, so like Locke's claims about wanting people to be free, but being invested in slavery means that we can't trust the terms in relationship to the claims, you know, and blackness creates a different kind of accountability to think about freedom. Like if we focus on freedom, then blackness suggests that we need to be more accountable to people, particularly those who are not experiencing it now. Even though it also is being claimed as universal, right? So thinking about blackness as universal thinks it shifts the focus of who's actually where freedom should also be emerging.
And I mean, you end the book on a discussion of black power, but also in relation to optimism and pessimism.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a bit more about that?
I mean, I think that, you know, Frank Wilderson's book on Afro-pessimism, but also Sadia Hartman's work on Afro-pessimism and Jared Sexton, I think it often gets misread as impossibility, like you should just give up completely. But I think that they're pessimistic about possibility within liberalism, because liberalism is simultaneously claiming, again, freedom all the time, but then making certain people unfree at the same time that it's claiming a kind of universal freedom. So I think the optimism comes from the position of thinking about the universal claims, you know, like the fact that people are saying that this is not, the current conditions are not adequate, and that we need to create something different, and that they're already enacting those possibilities now, that's where I think there's grounds for optimism amidst what appears as impossibility.
And what's next for you now that the book is written? What are you working on right now?
Well, we have this, I've been doing this film project called Filming the Future from Berlin, Filming the Future of Detroit, Filming the Future of Philadelphia. And so we're thinking about how those films, some of that work is in the book itself, like the, in 2015, which is so-called summer migration, when lots of Syrian refugees came to Germany. We did it was a 3-week project called Filming the Future from Berlin, Non-Citizen Perspectives, where most of the filmmakers had recently come, you know, from Syria. It made films about, you know, pity, you know, like it was about gentrification, about possibility. Since 2015, we've been making these films in Berlin, 2014 in Detroit, and then last year, 2022 in Philadelphia. Each year we made the films in an exhibit and then had a premiere screening in Berlin or Detroit or Philadelphia or Ann Arbor, where University of Michigan is based. So we're thinking about now how to circulate those films and thinking about how to exhibit or intervene through exhibition. That's going to take a year to construct that exhibition, which will hopefully then travel. We're starting in Berlin as a site. I'm also doing a project on Detroit. It's thinking about how white spaces get produced in a black city. And I eventually want to do a project that thinks about the Mediterranean and immigration.
Very exciting. Well, Damani, thank you so much for joining us today. And we've been talking about Damani Partridge's latest book, Blackness as a Universal Claim, Holocaust Heritage, Non-Citizen Futures, and Black Power in Berlin.
Thank you.